For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Hello and welcome to Wednesday afternoon here on Columbo and Katie on 101.9 and 94.1 News Talk STL. I am Tony Columbo in studio with the great Del Ponticus.
Howdy, Tony. How are you, buddy?
Hey, buddy. What's going on?
Not too bad. A little peak of sunshine here this afternoon.
Yeah. It's blue. The sky is blue out the window today for the first time in a while. I'll take it. Of course, Estelle with me all day today as Katie is on maternity leave, and we have got a packed show for you, a great show for you today. It's Wednesday, which of course means we will open up Close's cabinet and see what's inside just after 3 o'clock, so just about an hour from now. We'll talk to our buddy Mark Close from KC95. Always a lot of fun to talk to Mark. Always look forward to having a... It's a different... You know that segment, Stell, is going to be different than any other segment of the week. You could count on that.
Thanks to Mark.
As being a different conversation than you're going to hear any other time throughout the week.
That's why we put it in the middle of the week, so that it balances out everything else.
Exactly. So I always look forward to that. Also, in this 2 o'clock hour... Oh, man, so much to talk about. We will have Virginia Cruda from the Daily Wire join us at about 2:45. And in just about 10 minutes from now, we will be joined by the insider's insider, the great Rodney Boyd. And, you know, Rodney is a great political mind. And so I want to get his thoughts, you know, on the results in Georgia last night and... You know, what it means for the next couple of years leading up to the next presidential election. There's also some Missouri political news that is, it's Missouri news, but it's also national news. We'll get into that with Rodney in a little bit as well. So a whole lot of that to unpack as we go through the day today. Also, Pearl Harbor Day, the attack on Pearl Harbor was 81 years ago today, Stell. And, you know, I'm 44 years old. And so, you know, I was well past World War II.
Mm-hmm.
But even for me, it's really hard to like, to grasp that that was 81 years ago because, you know, growing up, my grandpa served in World War II, and you know there were veterans from the war everywhere that you could talk to or hear from, like
the ones who would talk about it.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. Yeah, but you know what I mean? Like the idea of
in general,
idea of talking to or meeting a World War II veteran was not an uncommon thing in my lifetime. And now it's 81 years ago. You know, the war was 80 years ago. And, you know, it's just, I don't know. I think, I guess the point of this is it's a reminder to how important it is to preserve the stories and memories of all the people that served, because it's getting to be so long ago that it's not one of those things that we can just get on the phone and talk to somebody about it anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Does that make any sense?
Yeah, especially in relation to the uniqueness of our nation and the fact that this is a constitutional republic, and the way the framers established this nation, different from any other nation that's ever been put on the planet, acknowledging what happened on that day is still important. And I go back a few more years than you, so I do recall as a kid encountering a lot of other folks who had served not just World War II, but even World War I when I was a little kid, but World War II. And my uncle landed on Omaha Beach, never spoke about it at all.
Yeah.
The entire time when I was young, I don't recall him making any comments about that. But I found out from other family members what happened. So I agree with you. It's a history-making moment that we need to keep top of mind.
Yeah. Yes. My grandpa passed when I was 15 years old, and I was just getting to that age. For example, that year, that he died, he was a big deer hunter and fisherman. And I spent a lot of time growing up going fishing with him. They lived over like in the Spanish Lake area. So I remember, you know, taking his little bass boat out on Spanish Lake and, you know, just going fishing with him all the time.
Yeah.
And hearing all of his you know, and hearing him talk about hunting and how, you know, and knowing how much he enjoyed that. In fact, the shotgun that I still have to this day at my house is one of his hunting rifles.
Nice.
So, but that year that he died was going to be the first year that I went hunting with him. So I feel like it's one of my great regrets or, you know, sadnesses in my life that I was just getting to the point where I was going to be old enough to be maybe talk to him about those kinds of things
and understand it and
learn a little bit if he would have been willing to share, you know, if he would have been willing to talk about it, you know, I don't know, but, you know, I feel like, you know, I was just on the cusp of being able to have that experience with him when he was taken away. So, I think it's just, if you take anything else away from today, I think it's just that it's how important it is to preserve the memories of those that served because, I don't know, like doesn't it seem 81 years ago? I mean, that just sounds crazy. It just does not feel like it was that far away in history.
I was talking with someone the other day about some of the incidents that happened in the mid-60s. And I commented to him that, well, when such and such happened in 65, 67, you know, I was a naive 15, 16, 17-year-old. I really didn't grasp everything that was going on then. And, yes, of course, I remember exactly where I was when JFK was shot and Robert Kennedy and Martin Luther King Jr., all of those events had happened and the riots in the late 60s and the stuff that happened in my hometown of Chicago in 68, which I missed because my mom, dad, and I were in my dad's village in Greece for that summer. So those 3 months, I totally missed all the riots and everything in Chicago during the Democratic Convention.
Yeah.
But, you know, being a young kid back then, like you said, I don't know if I would have grasped everything until maybe I got to when I was 16, 17, 18 years old, and then it would have started sinking in.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, so we, of course, want to, you know, honor and remember everyone who, obviously, the remaining World War II veterans out there, but all the veterans that have served the country on a day like this. It's a good day to remember and thank all of those that have served the United States.
Yes, indeed.
So let's switch gears to Georgia. We'll talk, like I said, we'll talk to Rodney Boyd about this and other things. But before we get Rodney on the phone, wanted to talk about it a little bit with you, Stell, and get your thoughts and a little bit of reaction to last night's results. Raphael Warnock wins and, you know, 51.4% of the vote is the last I saw. You know, it was 99% counted or something like that, so it's not going to change much if it changes at all. 51.4% in today, like, that's a blowout compared to, you know, what we are kind of used to in places like Georgia and other, you know, these...
What's going on in Arizona and some other places, yeah.
51.4 to 48.6 is... You know, that's a landslide in today's results.
It's a decent gap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what I mean? Like, you know, it's not, but...
The interesting thing...
But it feels like it. You're so used to them being, you know, like just a couple tenths of a point away from each other that when you see, you know, an actual spread, you know...
And when I was following it late last night... Walker was up by 8,000 and then 12,000 and 22,000. And yet I saw different news organizations and who crowned them the ones who can, you know, make the decision. But they came out and declared Warnock the victor. And I'm thinking, you guys know what counties are still out there, what votes have not been tallied or have not been reported yet. And you're just... looking down the line and realizing that a lot of Democratic votes are still coming in over the next 2 to 3 hours. And, yes, they did show up.
Yeah, I remember hearing Newt Gingrich on you know, Georgia's his state, you know, so he's he's not only an expert anyway, but, you know, especially when it comes to Georgia. Mm-hmm. So he was on at one point, and he was talking about how it was looking good for Herschel Walker because at whatever point of the night that was, I think it was like in the 60% or something that was reporting at that time, and it was basically a dead heat. And he was saying, you know, well, it's looking good for Walker because the remaining, you know, the remaining votes to be counted are in good counties for Republicans. So, you know, it looks like he's on track. You know, he looks like he's got a great chance of winning. And you flip the channel and the expert on that station says the exact opposite, says, yeah, it's, you know, it's a dead heat right now. But looking at the counties that are still out there, they're the ones that will lean towards Warnock. And like, I'm like, I mean, it's literally couldn't be more opposite of messages at yes. the exact same moment, being reported at the exact same moment on two different stations. And for me yesterday, I had just a million things going on at home after work last night. So I had the TV on and, you know, I'm flipping around a little bit when I can, but mostly I'm just kind of, you know, doing whatever little job, laundry or, you know, whatever, and kind of going in and out of the room and like every time looking at the TV. And I look at the television and Raphael Warnock is winning by 0.3 of a point. And 5 minutes later, I look at it and Herschel Walker is winning by 0.2 of a point. 5 minutes later, it's tied. And then 5 minutes later, there's a check mark next to me. Like, it just exactly. went, it was, you know, like, I'm so used to seeing, like, you know, my brain, I'm like, okay, who's up now? Or, you know, like, how close is it? And then just, like, suddenly there was a check mark.
Yeah.
And it just seemed like, whoa, where did that come from? But obviously, you know, the numbers changed quite a bit because it was all night, as you said. It was like, it was either tied. I mean, there were several points of the night where it was literally 50-50. And it never seemed to get more as the night went on, more than like a half a point of an advantage. And then just sort of all of a sudden it was like a 2-point lead for Warnock and it was over. It
all of a sudden.
I'm not saying that.
I know.
But you know what I mean? It was very surprising. There was a quote, last night from a host on CNN. That I'll read this quote and I'll let everybody think about it, and then I want to get Stella your thoughts on it, and I'll read it for Rodney too. But I thought this was very interesting. A host on CNN after the election was called last night. I turned it on and she said, and I don't know who this person was. It was not somebody that I recognized, but she was in the main, right, sitting in the middle of the screen, in the middle of the 4 or 5 person panel right there. And she said that the only reason anyone is questioning Joe Biden's ability to lead the country at this point, or questioning his ability to run again, is his age. Because her point was, he has delivered more results for the party than past presidents and more than anybody could ever have expected.
Jeez.
He's you know, he's held on to the Senate and actually increased their lead in the Senate, barely lost the House when historically it would be a much bigger swing after 2 years of a presidency. And you know, just kind of went down this list of, like, you know, you can say what you want about Joe Biden, but look, he's delivered for his party more than most presidents have, and you know, and even, you know, against the historical, you know, commonalities.
Accomplishments, quote unquote.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And when I hear somebody say that, my guts are like, how could you say that with a straight face? But then when you think about it, she might be right, which is baffling, shocking.
From their perspective?
Sad.
Yeah, I understand.
But you know, like, it usually, like, when I heard her say it, like, my gut instinct is to go, you know, oh, how could you possibly say something like that? That's just ridiculous, partisan pandering. And but then you could certainly look at it a certain way and put a lot of feathers in Joe Biden's cap, which, again, I cannot believe that those words are coming out of my mouth, or certainly out of their mouth, or anything else. But it's pretty amazing. It's pretty shocking.
I think the part that bothers me a lot is that we have a media that is totally, and I'm going back now to the Cold War days, I look at the media as Pravda. I look at the way it was set up in Russia back then when everything was in agreement with those who ruled the nation in the Soviet Union. And to me, the media
today, I'm used to that, though. I'm used to just terrible opinions or terrible takes or even like just flat lies about a given issue. But there are facts that back this up. Like, you know, they increased their lead in the Senate. They almost held on to the House. They've had a pretty decent success in elections around the country.
You know, I look at the vote tally from last night and it comes out to about 3.5 million votes. And that's a lot more than I expected for that particular race. Yeah. And I'm looking at the totals and realizing, all right, Georgia came out. If there were pockets of Georgia that didn't come out because they felt as though my vote's not going to count. Well, you know what? Your vote would have counted.
Absolutely.
And in such a close race, it was important for everybody to show up. Obviously, a lot of folks did. You know, the part that's always in the back of my mind is how many of those votes were valid votes.
Yeah.
But besides that point, to see 3.5 million, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So much for all that commentary that we got about the voting situation in Georgia and how there was voter suppression. Hey, 3.5 million showed up for this.
And we said it yesterday, 4 weeks ago, on general election night, if you would have said that after this election process was over, that the Democrats would be in a better position in the United States Senate than they were going in, you would have been laughed off and called crazy. But that's the reality of things right now.
And sarcastically, I guess you can say Kamala lost her gig because
Now
she doesn't have that tiebreaker vote if it's needed.
God forbid there like something like another Supreme Court opening comes up. A lot easier for the Democrats to get things accomplished. I mean, a lot easier for the Democrats to get things accomplished in the Senate. Luckily, the House will be there to stop a lot of legislation. But, you know, when it comes to things like Supreme Court justices or other things that are voted on the Senate, it just got a lot easier for the Democrats. All right, let's talk to Rodney Boyd about all of these things and more when we get back to Columbo and Katie on 101.9 and 94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Welcome back to Columbo and Katie on 101.9 and 94.1 News Talk STL. Don't forget that the Christmas promotion is going on right now. St. Louis Conservative Christmas, your chance to register to win all kinds of great Christmas presents is happening on our website, newstalkstl.com. We're giving away 4 presents a day for the next couple weeks. And again, all you have to do is register to win. And we will announce the winner names 4 times a day, but you don't have to be listening to win. We just are congratulating you. We'll contact you if you do win. And you can register as many times as you want. Just like you can send as many letters to Santa Claus as you want, you can register for this promotion as many times as you want. Give yourself a better chance to win. So again, get all the details at newstalkstl.com. And we'll announce our winner of the day just after 3 o'clock, right before we talk to Mark Close. Right now, joining us on the phone is our good friend, the Insider's Insider, Rodney Boyd, with us again. Rodney, always great to talk to you, my friend. How are you?
Tony, I am good, man. There's always no shortage of stuff.
Yeah, certainly.
Good to be on with you, man.
I was saying in the first segment that, you know, after we get, you know, what we're sort of used to, especially in places like Georgia, Senator Warnock winning with 51.4% of the vote almost felt like a landslide victory, although it didn't shape up that way until the very end. It was close all night and then suddenly over with. What are your thoughts? What was your initial reaction to the results of the runoff election last night?
It was such a back and forth until about 9 o'clock last night till I couldn't tell. And it was really an interesting testament to just how close these cycles are going to be now. If you're not on a presidential cycle with somebody at the top of the ticket that really draws people out. You know, it's interesting because Herschel Walker's campaign kind of went into more of a passive mode in the last week, where Warnock went to more aggressive, raising money, getting out. And some people said that was because he didn't have the traditional camp team or whoever was really organizing that major election out front, guiding his effort. And what would have happened? I mean, it was interesting. It was so close. I think it was less than 200,000 vote difference. What would have happened? What could have happened if the Walker campaign had the kind of organization that the Kemp campaign had just a month ago? We don't know. It's just, it's an interesting read. I still think for the volume of energy that was put into the Walmart campaign, it was still pretty close. It was very, very close.
Yeah.
So I think that obviously it's like any other contest, the winner wins, but that margin is not something that you sort of sit back and go, boy, we had a great victory tonight. You won, but it was much too close for comfort. That tells you there's a lot of people in Georgia, that have a differing opinion about who should be their senator. So we'll have to see how it plays out over time.
A lot of people in the media and politics, especially those that are detractors of former President Donald Trump, want to use last night's results as another example of Trump's fading power over the Republican Party and over Republican voters. Personally, I have no problem calling out Donald Trump when I think he is guilty of something or is conducting himself with bad behavior. But I'm not sure that I pin this one on Donald Trump. You would know better than I would about political influences and endorsements on elections. Do you feel like this was any type of a call out of Donald Trump or just a Herschel Walker thing?
So it's very interesting that your analysis, because here's what I will say. It's easy to say, hey, Trump endorsed him and he lost, therefore Trump lost. Another way to look at this is Trump endorsed him and he won the original primary, which was a big win over another gentleman that people were supporting. He also got into a runoff. I would tell you that I'd be very careful before I would sort of say, hey, I'm going to write the obituary on Trump's political prowess, because I don't think without Trump's endorsement in Georgia, Herschel Walker would have ever gotten into a runoff.
Yeah.
I think for as much as he didn't win the race, as much momentum as he did garner was because he had Trump's endorsement. And that actually is something that I think people can underestimate at their own peril. You know, time and time again, I watched this in 2015, 16, when people said, well, Trump, you know, he's only got 25%. He's not this, he's not that. We've heard these things before. I think what people need to pay attention to is what was the impact of Trump in that race? And it was to, I think, take a guy who literally moved back to Georgia about a year and a half ago and put him in a position where he lost by less than 200,000 votes. I think that's my takeaway, not Trump endorsed him and he lost. Now, if you want to take the latter approach, you certainly have the facts on your side, but I'd be very, very cautious to think that this is anyway an indication that the Republican Party has moved into or Republican voters have moved into a post-Trump era. I just don't think that's the case.
Yeah, and for me, you know, I will absolutely agree that right now, I don't believe that Trump has the same swagger or pull in the Republican Party or with voters in general as he may have had in the past and when he was president. So I would certainly agree with that. I just, in isolation, I'm not sure this one single election in Georgia last night was, you know, an indication on Trump specifically, because I kind of felt like he was a bit on the sidelines in at least the runoff part. I mean, I don't remember him like holding any big rallies down there. He seemed to sort of, you know, endorse from a distance rather than get in, get really active in the campaign. So I don't know if that's had anything to do with it.
I think that's a good point. I mean, we didn't see in the last 3 weeks was a Trump rally or two or three or any in the state of Georgia. Yeah. I'm not sure why he didn't show up, because, you know, the fact is maybe that would have made the difference for the 200,000 or 300,000 votes that Herschel Walker needed. But he didn't show up. And so I think from the initial primary victory to the general election getting to the runoff, there was a lot more presence, at least social media and messaging from the president and then former president. And then you got into this phase and there was really it was an odd level of almost complacency or just tone downness, even for Herschel Walker himself. I mean, I was watching where he would go and what he would do, and his events were very, you know, minimal for the last 7 days, which you would expect a guy to like scorch the Georgia terrain and everywhere with a megaphone, and he didn't do that. So There's a lot to try to unpack with this race. I still go back to the premise that I don't think you had a Herschel Walker that would have won a primary, gotten to a runoff, and been as close as he was yesterday without the Trump endorsement. Yeah. So I think that you have to pay attention to that reality before you say the loss, you know, it means that this sort of Trump's imprimatur is not the same, because it took a lot to get Herschel Walker to where he was. And a lot of that was the energy that he gained from the Trump base in Georgia.
So there was a quote from a CNN anchor last night that Stella and I were just talking about before we got you on the phone, and I want to get your thoughts on it, because this is one of those things that, you know, you turn on a station like CNN or MSNBC, and you're sort of prepared for, you know, these statements that you are not going to agree with, or, you know, that you just want to, your initial reaction is to just, like, pick it apart and say, oh, my, you know, that is not reality. And my guts did that when I heard this. I was like, that is absurd. But then I started to think about it, and I went, oh, I can't believe I'm saying this, but maybe she's right. This host on CNN last night said that the only reason that anyone is questioning Biden's ability to lead the country or run for president again is his age, because his results speak for themselves. He's delivered results for the party more than anyone thought possible. He's bucked historical trends in the also. And her point was the president has done more for the Democratic Party than anybody historically could have expected or anybody gives him credit for. And again, when I heard it, I was like, that's ridiculous. But then when you look at recent election results and some of the successes that the party has had and been able to hold on to in his presidency, I can't believe I'm saying it, but I think maybe she might be kind of right. What do you think?
Well, look, I mean, I think it's easy to dumb it down and say, well, you know, the president has done all these things and therefore he's really winning. Look, there are a lot of variables at play. And, you know, the president gets the benefit of the victor as he would have gotten the critique of the spoils. But to, you know, there is a real question about the efficacy of the Biden administration on the global scene.
Mm-hmm.
We still have an unresolved war in Ukraine. We still have, you know, nuclear chaos happening in Iran and in North Korea that's unsettled. We still have a global economic crisis that we are inoculated from because of some of the way our country runs, but globally.
We've got a crisis at the border. We've got a crisis with crime. I get it. We got all kinds of problems. Yeah.
You know, so if you want to take election results and turn them into overall results, I think it's a very dangerous thing to play. Look, age matters. We have a country where in most of the corporate settings, we have a mandatory retirement age. We have an age in which we as a nation give people a benefit called Social Security. Why do we do those things? We did work 30, 40, 50 years of their lives, should reach a point where they don't have to work anymore.
Right.
I'm not saying that age is a disqualifier, but it is a factor that we should consider. And the fact that, you know, you're somebody at 80, 81 years old running for the most significant job in the world,
mm-hmm.
not just in America, but in the world, at a time, by the way, where even, you know, a person 30, 40 years younger would be taxed physically, is something we should consider. You know, it's something that we should examine, and it's something we should talk about as a nation, because what we don't want is to put someone in a position where we expect more from them than they can give.
Mm-hmm.
Now, having said that, that's what the election will be about. I don't think you're going to get through this election without some serious consideration on the viability, not to be a person and to live, but to run and to do the hardest job that we can ask any human being to do from 2024 to 2028. I think we have to have a conversation about age and viability. And I think it's respectful to Mr. Biden for him to introspectively ask those questions as well. Am I the best person at this time to lead the world and the nation in what will prove to be, as we see now, one of the most challenging times in our lifetime?
Nope.
So I think for people to sort of say, hey, we've got some victories and therefore people should look over the age, or people should look over the capacity to do the work, I don't think that's a well thought out approach. I think we all should ask ourselves about age and viability of any candidate, coming or not, when you're talking about the job and the demands. You know, one of the things I thought you and I were going to talk about a little bit was I was been following the sentencing of the robbery case from the city of St. Louis, and
yeah.
I was just, quite honestly, I mean, I was really, really, you know, kind of I was really, really not surprised, but I was really taken aback and just realized how serious the U.S. Attorney's Office took those charges when the sentencing came down today. I mean, I believe that two of the sentences are 4 years and one are 3 years, and the fines are low, but that is a significant sentence for anyone to face in the federal prison. So I know you've been talking about what's happening in the city, but
no, I was just about ready to move over into local issues here. So this was one of them. Yeah. So yeah. Any thoughts?
The former president of the Board of Aldermen, mm-hmm. in his fourth term, senior Democrat and a young upstart Democrat, all sentenced today to significant time in the federal prison, is something that I think should be a clarion call to anybody in the Office of Public Trust that, you know, it's just not worth it to play fast and loose with the power and responsibilities that you're entrusted with. And clearly this U.S. Attorney's Office has sent a shot across the bow to anybody that holds any position of public trust,
mm-hmm.
That they're not going to get away with any of the shenanigans that people may have thought were gone unnoticed in times past. We'll see what happens, but these are significant sentences today.
Yeah.
I don't think these are light sentences by any stretch of the imagination, because in the federal system, the adage is you have to do something like 80 to 85%
85,
of your time.
It's 85%.
Yeah, 85% mm-hmm. of your time. And so when you get 4 years, you're going to spend at least 3 years in a federal prison.
Yeah, it's not going to be 6 months and then you're on parole.
Exactly.
You're actually going to be held accountable. And I agree, that's a little bit of a refreshing moment in time here with this. We've only got a couple of minutes left. I want to get your thoughts on one more sort of local issue that blends into the national scene, speaking of 2024. And this is, you know, I'm used to hearing talks behind the scenes or, you know, amongst people, you know, like throwing out rumors or ideas or this person's doing that. But there was an article in the Post today, and it was the first time that I've seen an actual story about this, an article claiming that Missouri Senator Josh Hawley is angling to be Trump's running mate, his VP in 2024. What do you think about the possibility of Senator Hawley running and angling and wanting to be the person for that job and or even the possibility of that happening? And unfortunately, we've only got like 2 minutes, Rodney, so I know that's not fair, but what are your thoughts?
Well, look, keep this in mind. I don't think that that's out of the purview of possibility. Senator Hawley's term, I think, ends in 2025. He'd have to make a real decision as to whether or not he wanted to spend his time running for that. But his term ends in 2025, so he doesn't immediately have to give up the seat. So there's a bit of safety there, mm-hmm. if he is vetted to be the VP. I think it certainly brings two generations together. We talked about age. I mean, you have Trump in his late 70s, Hawley in his early 40s. I mean, certainly you bridge a wide divide of generational thought and interest. It would be a very interesting ticket. And, you know, because if you think about this, if you're Senator Hawley and you don't have to abandon your Senate seat for this opportunity and you get it, whether you win or lose or not, I mean, you get to raise your profile to a presidential level. And if there is a chance where President Trump will still get reelected, he can't run again. So he has one term.
Mm-hmm.
So whoever his VP is would probably be somebody contemplating taking the opportunity 4 years later to move to the top of the ticket.
Man, if that does happen, you know, I know especially at this point, everything's a long shot at this point. But if that does happen, the state of Missouri under the national hot spotlight once again, and it just seems like we always find our way there, and this would definitely put us there again. Rodney Boyd, really appreciate your time as always, my friend. Look forward to talking to you next week.
All right, talk to you next
week.
Okay.
Enjoy the rest of your afternoon. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Great stuff there from Rodney Boyd. Yeah, that was the first time, you know, we've all, you know, you talk about people having political aspirations and who would be good for this and who's going to run for that. But this was the first time that I saw an actual story, you know, in the media about Josh Hawley angling to be Trump's running mate.
Especially coming from the Post disgrace.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I didn't say it was a positive story.
Huh?
I just said it was a story.
Because I'm sure from their perspective, they're thinking, ooh, a lightning rod.
Yeah.
In the number two slot. Oh, okay, yeah, we'll see what happens.
Boy, it sure would give us a lot to talk about.
But boy, you look at the rest of the remaining possibilities, not remaining, because we haven't even really gotten into it yet. But with Kristi Noem and DeSantis, and maybe Carrie Lake, depending on what happens down in Arizona and some of the other possibilities there. Okay, I can see where maybe Josh would be somewhere in the mix. But Golly, it is pretty early to be thinking about that.
Yeah, but man, what an interesting development if that comes to fruition. Be incredible. All right, another quick break, and when we get back, we'll talk to our friend Virginia Cruda from The Daily Wire. Speaking of the 2024 election, there is a whole bunch of new polling information showing possibly what voters across the country are thinking about the various candidates. Want to get Virginia's thoughts on those polls and more in a moment here on Columbo and Katie on 101.9 and 94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
So, running a little bit behind right now, so I'm going to dive right into the conversation with Virginia Cruda from The Daily Wire. Virginia, always great to have you on. Really appreciate your time this afternoon, as usual. And before we get into anything else, want to get your thoughts on the results in Georgia last night. I got to, I'm trying to gather all the opinions as we try to figure out what happened last night and what things are going to look like in the future. So, what are your thoughts on the runoff election?
Well, I have to say, especially after the results of the general election, I can't say that I'm surprised. I mean, we kind of got the same results that we got in the general. We just got confirmation that they were real. And again, Georgia is tricky because it's one of those states that is traditionally a red state, but it's not really a red state anymore because of the influx of the Hollywood population. And so, especially around Atlanta, this is a progressively more large blue areas in the state. And if you look at a state like Illinois, like where I live, sometimes the blue area of the state is big enough to carry it. You look at Chicago and then the rest of Illinois, right?
Yeah.
And so it's unfortunate that Georgia may be going that way, but it seems to be the direction that it's headed unless something is done to change it. So that seems to be where we are right now. And you know what's really interesting is that the people that I'm watching, like on Twitter, responding, and of course they're lefties, and they're saying, I can't believe that so many people voted, they always bring race into it. So many white people voted for a black man who paid for an abortion. Now, they're not saying allegedly, because we still haven't proven this.
Right, right.
This is just somebody's word against Herschel Walker's. They're saying, well, he paid for an abortion and he lied and he did this, that, and the other. And I'm like, you're saying that while you're advocating for a pro-abortion pastor who wants to use taxpayer funds to pay for thousands of abortions.
Who also had plenty of white people vote for him because you have to win an election of that size. So what does race have to do with anything, right, in that particular
instance? Not to mention the fact that his church owns a building that evicted a bunch of poor people, and are we going to really talk about this? And when you talk about Herschel Walker's marital troubles, does he have them? Sure. Does Raphael Warnock have them? Yes. But are we allowed to talk about him? No, because he's a Democrat.
Right. No. Yeah.
Like,
it's always a different playing field.
Running over his ex-wife's foot,
right,
on purpose.
Yeah. Yeah. It's always a different playing field, isn't it?
He was using campaign funds to pay for childcare.
You know, it's interesting you bring that up, because this just popped into my head because it was just in the news again. Joe Biden's accuser, Tara Reid, is kind of making news again. And, you know, like, just to your point, a perfect example of, had those accusations been made against a Republican president, I think Tara Reid's story and that whole situation would have been a lot more investigated and a much bigger deal than what it was. It's two different playing fields.
Well, how many profiles were done, like puff piece profiles, were done of the people who accused Kavanaugh of doing things without being able to pinpoint a day, time, or any witnesses that could corroborate anything happened?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, let's how many, and on Donald Trump, same thing, same question. How many puff pieces were done about these women who made accusations that couldn't be proven, or no corroboration, no anything behind them? Like, you only need corroboration if you're accusing a Democrat. And then you better have it written in stone. Because if it's not, then, well, it's just something that somebody said.
Yeah. Politicians like Keith Ellison up in Minnesota come to mind. Like, so many allegations, well, and a lot of, and more than smoke in that instance, a lot of proof also that just gets swept under the rug because of the side of the aisle he's on.
Al Franken is going to come up again, by the way. The former senator from Minnesota. Now, here's the thing. I will say that what Al Franken did is far from the egregious things that have been done by other people, especially in his own party. And, you know, should he have resigned? Maybe. But I'm not willing to necessarily say that. He resigned really to avoid the circus that was going to follow the accusations. Mm-hmm. Not because I think he really believed he did something wrong. But he is in the running for the Daily Show.
Oh, geez.
Now that Trevor Noah is leaving.
Oh, wow. That will be something.
And there are a number of names being floated, including Chelsea Handler. I can't think of her name now. Wanda Sykes.
Oh, yeah.
There are a whole host of.
Oh my goodness!
That will be
an adventure.
Is one of them, and he is set to be D.L. Hughley, John Leguizamo, Sarah Silverman, Marlon Wayans, Leslie Jones. These are all people who are going to guest host when they come back after December 17th.
That will be a very interesting thing to keep an eye on, and another added into the three ring circus. Virginia Cruda from the Daily Wire, really appreciate your time as always. We will talk to you again very, very soon. You can read Virginia's articles at thedailywire.com and of course newstalkstl.com. Don't go anywhere. We're opening up Close's Cabinet when we get back.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.